This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, September 15th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News. We'll also look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. Indiana's Department of Homeland Security says six people have died in the state due to weekend rain and strong winds. A busy stretch of Interstate 80-94 in northwest Indiana remains closed this morning due to flooding caused by heavy weekend rains. The rain and strong winds prompted the evacuations of thousands of homes. A 48-year-old teacher and his 74-year-old father drowned while trying to rescue a 10-year-old boy from a swiftly flowing flooded ditch in a Chesterton subdivision. The boy made it out safely. State officials also reported storm-related deaths in Clark, Ohio, Crawford, and Perry counties in Indiana. About 40 Indiana National Guard troops assisted with the evacuation of up to 5,000 residents from about 3,000 homes in Munster. Homeland Security estimated 200,000 people were without power statewide late last night. Yesterday's heavy rains locally caused a number of flooded roadways and viaducts in Champaign, prompting an advisory from the city to motorists to steer clear of such areas, but there were no reports of injuries or anyone requiring assistance to be rescued from their vehicles. And although the water level on flooded flood-swollen rivers and streams in the Chicago suburbs began falling early this morning, a number of communities are still reporting flooding and evacuated homes. City spokesman Will Soderberg says the river in Des Plaines peaked at slightly over 10 feet late last night, well above the 7-foot flood stage. Soderberg says the Des Plaines River level had dropped several inches by 6 this morning and was expected to continue falling. About 100 homes in Des Plaines were evacuated, and about 400 residents were removed from their homes in Riverside, which is also on the Des Plaines River. Further west, about 750 people were relocated from an apartment complex along Salt Creek and Edison. Flooding was also reported on the Illinois, DuPage, and Little Calumet Rivers, as well as several smaller streams. Dozens of veterans spent part of their Saturday afternoon listening to Veterans Affairs Secretary James Peake explain changes at the Marion VA Medical Center. But as Jennifer Fuller reports, not everyone is convinced actions at the facility have gone far enough.
Major surgery was halted at the Marion VA after 9 patients died as a result of substandard care and mismanagement. Numerous changes have been made, with some doctors and administrators being removed or reassigned. But Korean War veteran David Conrad says while he hears good reports of overall care from his fellow vets, he's still worried.
I don't hear anything really bad about that. It's those 9 deaths that are still troubling me.
VA Secretary James Peake told a crowd at Saturday's town hall meeting he wants to move forward now that a new team is being put in place, but he says he understands why some people want more action against the former administrators and doctors.
It may stick in the craw, but the issue is, how do you move forward? And you move forward with quality leadership that is doing the right thing.
Members of the Illinois congressional delegation say they're keeping a close eye on the Marion VA and are working on legislation to help further protect veterans. I'm Jennifer Fuller.
Illinois State Senator James Meeks and Governor Rod Blagojevich will square off in a long-awaited meeting on education funding today. Meeks recently encouraged students in Chicago to skip the first days of class to protest inequalities in school funding. The governor said he'd meet with Meeks on the issue only if he called off the boycott. Meeks did, and now he has some FaceTime with the governor.
Well, I'm anxious to talk to him about keeping the promise that he made to sell or lease the lottery in 2006, using that money to fund education.
That alleged promise got harder for the governor to keep last Wednesday. The Illinois House voted to lease the lottery to pay for construction projects. Blagojevich and Meeks are expected to meet in the governor's Chicago office later this morning. Typically, the General Assembly acts on legislative vetoes late in the year, but this year the process is being pushed earlier, as Amanda Vinicky explains.
The General Assembly convenes in the fall every 2 years in what's known as veto session. That's when lawmakers usually vote to either accept or reject the governor's action on legislation. But the Illinois House has done a lot of its work early. Here's House Speaker Mike Madigan and Democratic State Representative Julie Hamos of Evanston at the end of the chamber's Wednesday session.
Speaker, did we just have our veto session? Representative, that's a very good question, and I'm glad you raised that. So all of the members should realize that the reason that we would normally come in for a veto session for House bills has been accomplished.
The House got an early start because lawmakers have been called back to the Capitol throughout the summer to deal with budget pressures and use the time to also take up vetoes. The Senate's also expected to act on the vetoes, but not yet. The Senate presidents indicated that chamber won't reconvene until November, when the veto session's scheduled to begin. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
After a developer applied for a demolition permit for an old house in Urbana's Elm Street, a local preservationist applied for historic landmark status to save it. A vote by the Urbana City Council tonight could decide whether the house receives landmark status or the wrecking ball. AM 580's Jim Meadows explains.
Urbana City staff members do not think the house, now an apartment house at 508 West Elm, qualifies as an historic landmark. Planning manager Robert Myers says the 1889 structure is shaped in the Queen Anne style with classical revival touches, but it's covered with aluminum siding, and Myers says that's too much of an alteration for an historic landmark.
If you can't see the historic architecture because it's covered, can it really communicate its significance?
But the Urbana Historic Preservation Commission is recommending landmark status for the house. Commission Chair Alice Novak says even with the siding, the home's styling is clear.
That includes the massing of the building, the roof line of the building, the formations of the building, including some gabled pavilions and tower-like features.
Novak's commission and city staff also disagree about the house's historical significance and whether its first occupant, businessman and postmaster Frank Bills, was a prominent member of the community. If the Urbana City Council grants landmark status, the house would join two others in the 500 block of West Elm that are already protected as historic landmarks. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Illinois Supreme Court is slated to hear cases at a Mount Vernon courthouse this week as part of a celebration honoring Abraham Lincoln. The court will hear two cases from the 3rd Appellate District. The sessions will be held Thursday at the 5th Appellate Courthouse, built around 1857 to house the Southern Division of the Supreme Court. The state's high court last heard cases in Mount Vernon in 1897 before moving to Springfield. The session is part of a program for the unveiling of a 9-foot bronze Lincoln sculpture. The event also features former Governor Jim Edgar moderating a panel on the Lincoln Papers. Mark Hesekis is chairman of the Mount Vernon Abraham Lincoln Bicentennial Committee. He says the event is historic because the Supreme Court rarely hears cases outside of Springfield. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. How is the crime of theft defined? As commentator Amy Guida explains, much of it is in the mind of the taker. A news story about an item placed at the end of a driveway inspired this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
I'll admit that I've added books to my bookshelf thanks to kindly people who left boxes of fiction and nonfiction on the sidewalks of New York. There are usually no signs on the boxes. Everyone just knows that when there's a box of something placed prominently in the place where trash would be, the stuff inside is free for the taking. And I've taken. So imagine my surprise last week when I read this headline on the Chicago Tribune's website. Angry Skokie woman places violin in driveway where it is stolen, police say. The story explains that the woman, angry with her violin-playing spouse, placed his violin at the end of the couple's driveway where it was, and I quote here, stolen less than 2 hours later, police said. Okay, I'm not saying that I'd ever take anything as valuable as a violin left at the end of a driveway, but we've acquired some furniture that way. Stolen? It would likely all come down to what was in the mind of the person who took the violin, what he or she knew or believed, and precisely where the wife left the violin. Depending on all that, the prosecutor might disagree with police who categorize the act as theft. Take a listen to the crucial language in the Illinois theft statute. A person commits theft when he knowingly obtains or exerts unauthorized control over property of the owner. That little word knowingly packs a big punch, especially when the United States Supreme Court has written this about trash. It is common knowledge that plastic garbage bags left on or at the side of a public street are readily accessible to scavengers, snoops, and other members of the public, and that, speaking very generally here, once we rid ourselves of trash, it's prime for the taking because the owner has abandoned it. Police generally don't even need a search warrant for it. Now, granted, the violin apparently wasn't in a plastic trash bag, but it was placed in a location that I myself have interpreted as ground zero for come and get me. Can a person knowingly take property of another when she truly believes with good reason that the other has abandoned the property? It's likely that a court would say no and refuse to find theft under these unique circumstances, no matter what the investigating police say. Though Illinois courts haven't faced the question precisely that I could find, many courts have basically decided that one cannot steal something one doesn't realize is the property of another. One cannot steal property that appears to have been abandoned. One cannot steal property that one mistakes for something else. If that sounds right to you, even without legal training and even without having added to your own list of household items thanks to the driveway generosity of others, you join at least a couple of those who left comments via the internet after the violin story. "Stolen?" asked one who's obviously walked in my shoes. When people place items at the end of the driveway, it's a signal to me that the item is trash. And maybe, just maybe, that's why the wife left the violin precisely where she left it. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. Mostly cloudy today, the high 65. Tonight, mostly cloudy during the evening hours, then clearing overnight with patchy fog forming, the low 47. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 73. Clear skies tomorrow evening, the low 47. For Wednesday, sunny skies, the high 77. Clear skies Wednesday night, the low around 50. Sunny skies Thursday, the high 78. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Monday, September 15th, you can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wil.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.